Because when I called, no one answered. When I spoke, they did not hear, but they did evil before my eyes and chose that in which I do not delight. You see, Cain was saying yes to God on Cain's terms instead of God's. That's one of the most dangerous things you can do. It's the essence of false religion to say yes to God on Cain's terms. Remember Christ said to a church, "You're lukewarm. I wish you were either cold or hot. And since you're lukewarm, I'll spew you out of my mouth." So Cain was reproved by God. It says very clearly that God respected Abel's offering and Abel, but did not respect Cain and his offering. And somehow, God made that known to Cain. I don't know how he did it. Maybe he spoke to him verbally. But somehow Cain knew, and he became angry. Ultimately, he was blaming God instead of repenting. And then he ignored God's gracious admonition. God said to him, "Don't let sin rule over you." Now you see, this is one of the characteristics of sin. When a person sins, he thinks he's ruling over the situation. I can do this. I can handle it. What is actually happening is sin is gaining a reigning position over the person. It will rule over you. But notice, even more serious than Cain's sin was his response to reproof. You see, the real measure of where a person is not whether he did a bad thing, but how he responds when reproved of that bad thing. In fact, the measure of a society or of a church is not whether something bad occurred in the church. It is whether and how that society or that church responds to that bad thing that came in the church. And so that set the stage for the next round of evil. The next round of evil was he had active and deliberate malice against another person, namely his brother. You see, Abel was following God diligently, and so Abel's actions were an automatic reproof of Cain, even if he said nothing to Cain. And so Cain wanted to silence that rebuke. Cain was evil before he killed Abel. You can read about it in 1 John 3, verses 11 and 12. And in this account, after he killed his brother, the Lord repeatedly emphasizes the word brother. In other words, it's showing what an enormous crime it was. You've killed your brother. He says, verse 9, "Where is Abel, your brother?" He said, "I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?" And he said, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. So now you are cursed from the earth, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand." And so on. You see, he is the first man to let sin reign in his life. And what this tells us is Cain's sin was much worse than the sin of his parents. See, that's what happens. You do something, and you know it's against God's will, it sets the stage for much worse things in the next generation. Not only that, Cain's response to God was much worse than the response of Adam. Regarding the offering that Cain had made that God did not respect, he refused God's reproof and God's warning. And then he turned around and killed his own brother. Now, regarding the murder of Abel, God said to Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" By the way, that's very similar to what God said to Adam. "Adam, where are you?" And you see, those two questions tie those accounts together. It makes a bridge that helps us see the connection between Cain's sin and Adam's sin. In other words, Cain's sin has an antecedent that hooks back to the father. But Cain, in contrast to his father, arrogantly evaded God's question. "Am I my brother's keeper?" Implying that God had no business asking the question. Now, Adam didn't act like that. Adam admitted what he had done. God said, "Where are you?" He He said, I hid myself because I was naked. Notice what God did here. God cursed Cain. Now, sometimes people talk about Adam and Eve, and they'll say that Eve was cursed, or Eve was under the curse. The Bible never says that. God did not curse Adam, and God did not curse Cain. He cursed the serpent, and he cursed the ground. Now, again, this second question ties back. What have you done? You see, God says, where is Abel your brother? He asked a where question, and then he said, what have you done? That same question was asked back in the garden of Eve. What have you done? So you see, it's tying these two accounts back to, tying this account back to the earlier account. It ties it back to Adam and to Eve. In fact, in chapter 3, verse 8, Adam and Eve hear the sound of God walking in the garden. And in Hebrew, the word for sound is the same word as voice. Adam has to give account of his actions. And here the source of a cry is what? He says, the voice of your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. The word translated voice is the same as sound. In other words, it's again putting a tie that hooks us back to that chapter 3. So now, remember, the ground in Adam's case, the ground was cursed because of Adam's sin, chapter 3, verse 17, and now the ground is polluted with Abel's blood. And that again connects us back to the sin of the parents. Remember, God never cursed Adam or Eve, but Cain is given the same treatment as Satan. God cursed the serpent. You're cursed above all livestock, chapter 3, verse 14, is parallel to cursed are you from the ground, chapter 4, verse 11. So you see, it shows like father, like descendant. The devil is the father of Cain. And you remember in 1 John, it talks about how we can know who are the sons of God and who are the sons of the devil. And it brings up the example of Cain. How does Cain respond to this? Not in repentance, but in fear of consequences. He charges God with injustice. My punishment is too great for me to bear. And notice that God shows graciousness even to this hardened sinner. There's a mark of protection put on Cain. Now, God could have marked Abel before he was killed. Instead, he marked this murderer. And possibly the reason is to emphasize that man was not to take vengeance on evildoers. Now, after the flood, there was a change. God said, all right, from now on, murderers are to be executed. But this all fits in with Cain is allowed to keep going. And that it corresponds to what we see in the New Testament with wheat and tares growing in the field. Why does God let the tares keep growing? Why does God allow Christian cults such as Mormonism? Why does God allow churches to prosper when those churches flagrantly and deliberately disobey God? Somebody will say, well, that pastor, he doesn't practice what it says there in the Bible, and he has a great ministry. Why does God allow that? You know what God does? God allows those things to happen to see if you are going to really follow God or not. In fact, in Deuteronomy chapter 13, verses 1 to 5, it talks about whether a person is saying, don't follow God, and God is allowing that to be there to see if you're really going to follow God. A lot of people look for opportunities and excuses that help them feel good about disobeying God. You see, you can choose whether you're going to be a little God of your own or whether you're going to submit to God and tremble at His word. So, Genesis chapter 4, verse 16, Cain departed from God's presence. He is self-centered. He is not interested in God impacting his life, and so he departs from God's presence. Notice that he goes to the land of Nod, east of Eden. Now, what this means is, Cain is further removed from Eden than Adam was. You see, he's going farther away. Something happened in the first generation, and now things are getting worse. And then he built a city. He built a rallying point apart from God. You know, I will be successful apart from God. You see, it's like Adam's sin. I will be wise apart from the way that God has prescribed for me to be wise. But Cain takes it a step further. Adam committed one act of eating the fruit to be wise, and now Cain is in the process of building a city after having departed from God. And he founded an ungodly race, and this ungodly race is especially illustrated by the man named Lamech. And Lamech, verse 19, took for himself two wives. The name of one was Adah, and the name of the second was Zillah. This man disobeyed God's obvious plan. Why is it obvious? Because God created Adam and Eve. He did not create Adam and Eve and Sarah. And so it was obvious that God meant for one man to have one wife. But Lamech took two. And why does it name these two women? Because they were partners in this innovation of evil, this new level of evil that happened. Now a man has two wives. That's a whole new level of evil. How did that ever begin? Because way back there, Adam and Eve disobeyed in what many people would say is a little thing. They just took a piece of fruit off a tree and ate it. And then Lamech boasted about killing a man. He magnified his retaliation for being hurt. And then he insulted God yet besides. I mean, Lamech says, I'll avenge myself much more severely than God does. Instead of viewing Cain's mark that God put there as a mercy to a hateful criminal, he viewed it as a positive precedent that he could make an even greater claim for himself. But notice how God's grace continues even to bless unrepentant sinners. He gave Lamech highly gifted special children. Lamech's sons were inventors and innovators. Jabal was one who invented nomadic cattle herding. Oh, great. You have cattle and you move your herd and they eat that grass, then you just move them to the next grass. Great idea. And Jubal invented musical instruments. Just imagine what an innovation this was. Oh, if you take a string and fasten it to a board and you pluck it and then you shorten that string and you can make tunes. Oh, if you take a pipe. Oh, where did you get a pipe? Well, you might have to take a piece of bamboo and ream it out, whatever, and then put holes at the right places and put your fingers over those holes and you can blow in there and you can make tunes. And so he was the inventor of both string and woodwind instruments. But not only that, Tubal Cain did something that was amazing. If you take rocks and beat them into pieces and heat them hot, you can make metal come out, and then you can shape that into things to make axes and various implements. Wonderful, wonderful. I mean, that's an amazing innovation. And so God blessed this evil Lamech, this polygamist, this violent man with geniuses for children. And in fact, they had an outstanding daughter. Her name was Naamah. We don't know what Naamah was like. But she is the only woman in that entire history who is mentioned as a daughter. Evidently, she was what Miss World of Cain's race was like in those days. That would be my guess. I mean, I don't have much information. But she must have been outstanding. The epitome of whatever they held in high esteem for a woman. Now this reminds me of something in 1 Chronicles chapter 2, verse 16. It says that there are a couple of men who were the sons of Zeruiah. Does anyone know who Zeruiah was? What did Zeruiah do? Well, he didn't do anything. Zeruiah was a woman. This is their mother. And the sons of Zeruiah were Joab, Asahel, and Abishai. And you didn't mess with those guys. She must have been a real tiger. I don't know what she was like. But the record never even tells us who the dad was. But those sons of Zeruiah, they knew how to fight battles. So in this text says, Naamah was their daughter. It must have been something very outstanding. You see how this displays God's goodness? God's goodness and generosity even to those who blatantly oppose him. And the New Testament talks about that, doesn't it? He sends rain and sunshine on the just and the unjust, the evil and the good. God actually gives breath and heartbeats to people who curse his face. Also, what this account shows is that evil people can produce things that are of great benefit to society. Is it a benefit to be able to raise cattle? Yes, it is. In spite of what some people think when they think you should be a vegetarian. Is it a benefit to have musical instruments? Yes, it is. If they're properly used, isn't it? You see, there are many good gifts that it's valuable to have if they're properly used. Is it a benefit to have metal to make tools out of? Yes, it is. You see, God's gracious blessing is no proof of right standing with God. God gives wonderful gifts to unbelievers. He gives wonderful gifts to people that don't deserve it. Aren't you glad? So notice, the moral violation of Adam and Eve leaves a terrible legacy. Those literary connectors in the text that connect us with questions and with events where chapter 4 is connected back to chapter 3 is an indicator. What was happening in the next generations was connected back to that violation that happened in the garden. You see, if you as a parent deliberately do things against what God says, it sets in motion consequences that will be magnified in your descendants. That's so important to learn that. And guess what? Isn't it a privilege that this account was written in this book thousands of years ago, so that we can benefit it without repeating the mistakes. So Adam's sin, which many people would call small, brought devastation to him personally. First of all, it brought spiritual death, lack of fellowship with God, banishment from the garden, and then food, instead of the easy prepackaged food that you pick off of trees and eat right away, you got to dig in the dirt. And have you thought about this? What about weeds? Are weeds good or are they bad? What's that?
I said, I guess it depends if you're dry. Some people use weeds.
Okay. The fact of the matter is, were weeds created in the first 6 days of creation or not?
No.
Amazing. You know what the Bible says? The Bible contradicts that answer. The Bible says that God created everything in the first 6 days. Everything. That includes the weeds. And they were very good. Weeds are still good. Do you believe that? You know what weeds are for? Those are God's emergency plants. So when there's a disaster, maybe there's a flood and it washes out a big gully in somewhere, the weeds, seeds germinate real quick. They're not trying to make any fruit. They're just putting their roots down. They're holding the soil, whatever soil is left. They're God's emergency plants to keep the soil from washing away. But you know what God did? When man sinned, he said, all right, to raise food, you're going to have to cut a gash in the earth. When you dig in the earth, what happens? God's emergency plants go into action. And so they sprout up right there real quick to hold the soil in place. And you've got to get out there and get rid of them so your plants can grow up. So you see, weeds have always been good. It's just that because of man's sin that God gave him an assignment that meant that he's going to have to battle these weeds now. So enjoy it while you're farming. So guess what? Adam can't just pick the fruit off the trees with his fingers, and it doesn't really work to cultivate very good with your fingers, does it? He's got to invent a hoe to help him out. You know, and you have these lengthy processes for preparing food. I mean, just think about it. If you want to eat wheat, you can go out there in the grain field and you can chew on some kernels for a while, but in general, what do? You have to grow the wheat, and then you have to harvest the wheat, and then you have to beat the chaff things off. What do you call those? The husks? And then you have to grind it, and then you have to bake it, and then, I mean, there's so much stuff you have to do. So Adam lost that kind of thing. But not only that, he began to die physically too. And eventually died after 900 years. But notice, this small sin, small in quotes, brought devastation to his descendants as well. Murder in the immediate family. And Cain's departure from God. And Cain founded an evil line. And then in that line, belligerent deviation from God's standard in taking two wives. And then a twisting of God's justice. And notice that Abel's righteous line was terminated. And evil had a head start. And it's like you have a crescendo of evil. You know, when you're playing a piece of music and it goes like this at the top of the score, like that, it means play louder and louder. Have you seen that symbol? So it's like a crescendo of evil. It's getting worse and worse. Adam and Eve were honest with God and repented when confronted. And Cain was dishonest, did not repent, and was arrogant. And then Lamech is flagrantly disobedient and boasts about it. Now, just think about this. How can we apply this? Are you ever tempted to skip your personal devotions? I mean, nobody will notice too much, right? But you know what happens? When you skip personal devotions, time to think about the Word of God and to pray, you have a loss of fellowship at that point because you skipped it. But then what else do you have? Well, it's what you don't have. You lack insight for that day. You lack victory in that day. You lack the ability to seize the opportunities to minister to other people. Or what about if you make selfish choices? Just selfish choices in small things. You know what will happen? That selfishness will grow in your heart and it will sabotage you and your family. Well, what if you fail to stand for truth when standing for truth is unpleasant? What do your children learn? Your children learn that truth is not important. That your prestige or your opportunities or whatever are more important than the truth. Well, what if you compromise something small in order to achieve something good? You know what happens? That opens into a new room with more opportunities. And if you compromise something else, that opens into another room with more opportunities. And your children start in the compromise rooms where you have brought them up. They don't start back in the other room where you were. They start in the compromise rooms where you've been. So, is there hope? What if you've sinned as a parent? Is all lost? Abel is gone. And Cain has utterly departed. Chapter 4, verse 25. Adam knew his wife again. She bore a son, named him Seth. For God has appointed another seed for me instead of Abel, whom Cain killed. And then there's an amazing verse, verse 26. And as for Seth, to him also a son was born, and he named him Enosh. Then men began to call on the name of the Lord. Notice that at the time of Enosh, men began to call on the name of the Lord. This is the opposite of the Cainite line. The Cainite line departs from God, has a rallying point apart from God, does what they feel like, and it doesn't mean that all the things they do are bad. It wasn't bad for them to have cattle. It wasn't bad for them to make musical instruments. It wasn't bad for them to make metal. But nevertheless, they are doing what they're doing apart from God. Now, it is so easy for Christians to simply do the normal things of life without reference to God. It's very easy. But here, you have something different. The actual opposite. Even though the Cainite line were doing some things that were good, but it was done apart from God, and then they were doing some arrogant things against God, now this is the opposite. These are people who are coming toward God. And so they're approaching God. What does this mean? This is a turning point in world history. Because at this point, men begin to call on the name of the Lord. You see, they all knew that God had created the earth. They weren't disputing that. They all knew that God was the one who punishes sin. They knew that God required an atonement. But now, these people discovered something that was much more glorious than all the glorious achievements of the Cainite civilization. What was it? That God answers when we call. You see, this is a huge discovery. Cain went out from the presence of the Lord. Cainites focus on temporal success. And the Sethites, namely the sons of Enosh, went into the presence of the Lord. So this one verse, this one little statement that makes all the achievements of the Cainite civilization look like nothing. Because this is greater than anything discovered in that period. Amazing. And so in a sense, Enosh becomes the head of a new race. In fact, the name Adam specifically is the husband of Eve, but it's also used as a designation for the entire human race. And the name Enosh is specifically the son of Seth, but he is an individual that in other Old Testament contexts is used to refer to the human race also. For example, I'll give you some literal renderings from Hebrew. Job 5:17a, "Blessed is the Enosh whom God reproves." In other words, it chose that name right there. Job 36, verse 25. "All Adam has looked on it. Enosh beholds it from afar." And Psalm 8, 4, literally, is like this. "What is Enosh that you are mindful of him, and the son of Adam that you care for him?" Interesting. And so, in a sense, Enosh is like the head of a new race of men that call upon God and continue on beyond the judgment of the flood. That brings us to chapter 5. Notice the continuing legacy of Adam's sin. This is the book of the genealogy of Adam. In the day that God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. Now notice, in the likeness of God. He created them male and female and blessed them and called them mankind in the day they were created. And Adam lived 130 years. He begot a son in his own likeness, after his own image. You see the emphasis there? It doesn't say he begot him in the likeness of God. It says he begot him in his own likeness. But what likeness was that? It was a fallen image. He's still in the likeness of God in a certain sense. Man still is in the image of God, but it's a fallen representative of that. You see, God created Adam in his own image, perfect and very good. Chapter 1, verse 27 and 31. And we have the contrast here. Now Adam only produces those who are fallen. And afterward, Adam begot sons and daughters and lived another 800 years and then died. And the history here in chapter 5 continues with this dismal refrain. A man lived so many years, begat a certain person, and after that begot sons and daughters, lived so many years, and died. And died, and died, and died, and died, and died. That whole list, except one place. There's a sudden shift in terminology. It says Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. And after he begot Methuselah, he did what? No, it doesn't say that. Not quite. Almost. Instead of saying it lived another 300 years, it says he walked with God 300 years. And God took him. Oh, did you catch the difference? These patriarchs were people who were following God, but they are described as merely living. Enoch, after he begot Methuselah, is described on a whole new level, and that is that he walked with God. In other words, his relationship to God was so much higher than the other ones that they were simply described as merely living, whereas Enoch is described as walking with God. And he walked with God 300 years and God took him. You see, the others merely lived and died. Now, what kind of choice do we have? We can choose the broad way, which basically is religious on our own terms. That's the way of Cain. That's following our own strategy and following our own plans. Or we can choose the narrow way, the way of Abel, the way that's right, even if that following the narrow way brings personal ruin to us. You see, Abel's testimony continues even beyond death. What kind of outworking is involved in this? You know, you can ask yourself this kind of question. Am I doing what the Cainites do at their best? Technology, culture, animal husbandry, whatever. Or are you going far beyond this? Namely, like Enosh, call on God instead of mere personal development and temporal success. You see, Enoch walked with God instead of merely living. You know, the shadow of our life extends far beyond our own lifetime. David, you find after he was dead, again and again, the historical accounts say, this man did like David his father. He did what was right in the sight of the Lord. And then there was another man, Jeroboam. And it says that Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, caused Israel to sin. And so again and again, there will be a king. He'll say, he departed not from the sins of Jeroboam, son of Nebat, who caused Israel to sin. You see, we set in motion a whole sequence of things by our life. What will be the main point that people remember about your life? Is it going to be something temporal? Oh, he made great metal instruments. Or is it going to be something eternal? What kind of lessons should we have as parents? Never suppose that a small sin won't produce greater damage to yourself and to your descendants than you can imagine. You see, the progression here in Genesis 3, 4, and 5 goes steadily worse. And finally, when you think about it, the line of Seth was so corrupted that only Noah's family went into the ark. Just Noah's family. And what we need to learn is to be like the descendants of Enosh. Call on God for intervention in our family. You know, God can work in our children's hearts. God has powerful resources to move our children spiritually. You can ask God to impress in your children to see that a life lived temporally apart from God is an utter disaster. It doesn't matter how successful you might be. You know, learning how to call on God is one of the greatest achievements that you can learn. And we can determine, I am going to choose to be one who lives a life like Enoch, a life that is walking with God. You see, it's not merely living and having a family. Some people think that's the goal in life. It's not the goal. I mean, there were patriarchs there that in Genesis 5 that lived and had a family. And it's not merely living and pursuing the legitimate things of this life. The Cainites did that. Instead, the goal is to truly walk with God and to teach our children. A day spent not walking with God is a disastrous day. And a day spent walking with God is a great day. May the Lord bless you. For tomorrow, study Genesis 24 and following. It's the account of Isaac and Rebekah and Esau and Jacob and so forth. So read up through chapter 31 or so. May the Lord bless you.